Good evening. We are on Spiritual Power of Truth by Joel Goldsmith, Chapter 3, Neither Good Nor Evil. And last week, we ended with this paragraph. Joel says, "Please believe me, I have worked so many years in this work. I have known from the beginning that we were dealing with the spiritual universe and that the evil in it wasn't real." Now, I suspect he knew that from a previous incarnation. "However," he says, "I never knew why, nor did I know how it came into this state of being out of Eden, until a revelation came to me. The revelation came in those passages where God said, 'Who told you you were naked?' Then I knew that something was wrong. The knowledge of good and evil, Adam and Eve thrown out of Eden, that gave me the whole secret. Eden represents our spiritual domain. Eden represents a state of harmony, or heaven. Eden represents our immortality, our state of divine being. And in Chapter 3, Eden represents our spiritual domain." Now, what threw us out of that? What threw us out into what the Master called this world? It is just as plain as anyone can read. The knowledge of good and evil, that's what did it. Now, as we approach our healing work, we have no knowledge of good and evil. So you see, we're not trying to turn evil into good. We have no knowledge of evil to be removed or risen above. Because so much of humanhood remains in us, we still recognize that we have before us the appearance of good and evil. The appearance of sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. As long as we are faced with that, we can't be absolute and just say, "Oh, God is all, there is no error." You can't do that. You have to sit down and let God say it to you. "He uttereth his voice, and the earth melteth." When you hear the still small voice, or when you feel that stirring within you, that divine presence within you, you may be assured of this: whatever appearance of sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation is before you will melt away. Never believe that because you could go out of here and say, "Oh, there is neither good nor evil," that it would work miracles in your life. You must begin. And remember how Jesus said to pray sacredly and secretly and silently. The only pure motive is to live spiritually and be a blessing to your fellow man. You have got to live with this for a year until you demonstrate it. Live with what? Live with the principle there is neither good nor evil. Let your eyes just scan the room, and I'll bet you can see good and evil everywhere. But what if you turn off those senses? Sit still and listen. "Speak, Father. What is really here? And inside of you, way down deep, that still small voice whispers, I am. You've got to live with this and prove it within yourself until it becomes so self-evident that the world sees it in you. Now remember, if you were ever tempted to tell this to anyone, you are just trying to be a show-off, and you're going to lose what you've got. You're going to lose the possibility of demonstrating it in this incarnation, because you can't trifle with the Word of God. You can't boast with it and play with it. The Word of God is something sacred, something secret, and it should never be divulged. Not for money, not for glory. I am telling it to you out of the integrity of a spiritual life that is devoted to spiritual living and spiritual healing. I'm confiding in you my life's secret. What is that secret? Well, he said, he didn't know why we were kicked out of Eden. He knew we were living in a spiritual universe. And the secret that was revealed was, we were kicked out of seeing the spiritual kingdom by seeing the belief in good and evil, seeing good and evil. You either see the kingdom or you see good and evil. And that's his life's secret. And this must be lived. This must be demonstrated. You must have this as a pearl of great price. If anybody wants it from you, let them prove they want it by giving up all they've got, by selling all they have, or else by earning their way to this teaching. You didn't buy your way in. There are loads of people who have more money than you have, and they are not in this teaching. You earned your way in by your consciousness. You earned your way to hearing this truth. You're entitled to it, without money, without price. It's all yours. However, remember this, I got it sacredly, and I've kept it sacred, and I have gone all around this world demonstrating it. The progress of the infinite way is the proof and the demonstration that this is truth. So I can impart it to you from experience. You can only prove it in the degree that you hug it tightly within yourself. Keep it sacred, but use it. Use it morning, noon, and night with every bit of error with which you are confronted in the newspaper, on the radio, on TV, in your family, on the streets. Use it. Wherever you are confronted with error, turn within yourself and ask, can I be made to believe in good and evil? Can I be made to accept two powers? No, I won't accept good and evil. Then you won't be tempted to try and heal somebody or heal something. You'll just stay within yourself and know the truth. There is only the Garden of Eden, which really exists, and we are in it. As long as we will not be made to accept appearances or judge by appearances, as long as we are willing to judge righteous judgment. And what is that righteous judgment? Well, righteous judgment says, in the beginning, God. God plus nothing leaves God. In the beginning, God created all that was made. God looked at what he made and found it very good. That's truth. And you shall know the truth. Then, as these ugly appearances stick up their heads, don't be fooled by them. Declare within yourself, I can't be made to accept good or evil. I accept God alone as constituting the Garden of Eden. God is the very substance of man, the very substance of the trees, the very substance of the crops, the very substance of life. God is all in all, because there are not two. There is neither good nor evil. There is only spirit. There is only life. Now, I think I told you last week that a very spiritual man told me once, I said, you're teaching us how to get out of this world into the kingdom, aren't you? And he smiled and said, this world is the kingdom when we see it right. And that's what he meant. And I have said this repeatedly, you're standing in the kingdom, but you're seeing good and evil. And so you don't have to go any place. You don't have to ascend. You just have to let go of the belief in good and evil. And you will awaken to the kingdom in which you are standing and living and having your being. There is no way on earth that you are ever going to know that you have learned a lesson of truth unless you demonstrate it. You prove it to be so. Brush all appearances aside and take your stand inwardly, peacefully, silently, and say, I am not accepting good and evil. I am accepting the first chapter of Genesis in which God created all, and all that God created is good. And I'm standing on that truth. If you stand on it firmly enough without ever letting it cross your lips, then see harmony appear and have someone come up to you and say thank you for praying for them, or see the discord change right into a harmony in front of your eyes. When you've had that experience a few times, you can say, now I have faith. Now I trust this truth. I've seen it demonstrated. Sometimes students are a little bit afraid to declare that they haven't a conviction or a faith for fear that it will be destructive to them. That is not good. It is much better to be totally honest and to say, I don't know. I don't know if there is a God. I don't really know. I'm not disbelieving it. I'm not going to be an atheist. I am merely going to say, I don't know. I have no knowledge of it, no conviction of it. And I can't go on this way. I must know. Not just believe, I must know positively. You know, when you are brave enough to take that stand, it won't be long until the voice will utter itself and say, this is me, right here, inside of you. Then after that, there will never be a question in your mind again. Even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you won't doubt. Now, this thing of just believing because you are afraid to admit that you really don't know, that won't help you. That, again, is worshiping God ignorantly. Be totally honest. If you haven't had a God experience or a God conviction, acknowledge to yourself that you haven't, but that you want it, that you know it is a possibility because others have experienced it. It must come to you too, not to prove itself, but because no man can live a happy life, a full life, until he has come to know God. Nothing is going to do that for you except the experience that reveals God within yourself. The experience that so reveals God within you that you can say, "It's all right, Father. If I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, it won't bother me. Whether I live on this side of the grave or the other side won't bother me. For now, I know that where I am, God is. That where God is, I am. Now I know nothing matters, and I and the Father are one. All that the Father hath is mine, and the place whereon I stand is holy ground. If I have no words, he will put words in my mouth. If I have no understanding, his understanding is infinite. It makes no difference about me now. I'm agreeing with Paul. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth my life. Christ fulfilleth me. I can do all things through Christ. I can of mine own self do nothing. The Father within me, he doeth the works." These things are not affirmations. They're not quotations from the Bible. These are now living truths. And I can promise you this. Everyone can have that experience if they will dedicate themselves to this truth, namely, that there is neither good nor evil. Refuse steadfastly to accept appearances, but keep it secretive. Keep it silent until it demonstrates itself. Don't lose it by spouting it. The Master is clear that prayer must be secret. One's relationship with God must be secret and sacred. So keep these things sacred. Don't even tell them to your nearest relative unless that nearest relative is as willing to pay the price as you are. The price of study, the price of meditation, the price of devotion. Do you see that? Then you can share and share liberally. The Master told his disciples when he left this scene that they should preach the gospel and go out and heal the sick. He told them to let this truth be known, but to be sure, very sure, that those they instructed were those of your household. He told them to be sure that they are those who want not just the loaves and fishes, but this inner secret to live by. So he's given you a very sacred and secret revelation, which is, you're standing in the kingdom of heaven, but you're seeing good and evil, and you must make a beginning. You must start. He says it'll take a year to demonstrate. With some it'll be quicker, with some it may even be longer. But you've got to make a start. You turn on the television and there is an ad saying that this man is a threat to democracy. You turn on the radio and here's an ad saying that this woman is a threat to democracy. This is the place to stop and say, "Wait, wait, wait. I'm not accepting good. I'm not accepting evil. Father, reveal what's really here, and then take that 20 seconds to be still and listen. Practice, 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 until it becomes like breathing, until it practices you. One of the unique principles of this message concerns the word impersonal or impersonalization. Since this is a unique principle, since this is one that is not ordinarily found in religious teachings, it becomes necessary to understand it thoroughly and to learn how to apply it in the experiences of daily living. It is a part of natural, normal human living to look outside ourselves and to look to others for those things which actually we already have embodied within our own being. The reason we do not know this is that we have thought of ourselves as being limited to our education or environment, or limited to our finances. We have so thought of ourselves in this way that we have brought forth the demonstration of limitation. Yes, a perfect demonstration of limitation. As you believe, so it is unto you. And so if you believe that you're limited, well, I don't have that PhD I wanted. Well, I don't have that six-figure income. Well, I grew up in middle class and never got any higher. Whatever it is you're clinging to, I do not accept good or evil. There's no good to chase and there's no evil to get rid of. If we knew that I and the Father are one, and that the Father has said, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Or if we were to consciously remember that I and the Father are one, not two, and that all that the Father hath is embodied within us as the Son of God, we would then know that what we call ourself is not to be spelled with a small s, but with a capital S. In other words, this which we call Joel would merely be the outward form of myself, but myself is that divine Son of God which is one with the Father, to which has been given the God-given dominion over all that is, and to which the Father has given his own allness. Now, once we begin to realize that our self is not a personal self, not a limited self to our personal sense of good, we should realize that our selfhood, our real being, is God. I'm going to read that again because I want to drive home the point and because I stumbled over it. Now, once we begin to realize that our self is not a personal limited self, is not a self limited to our personal sense of good, we should realize that our capital S self, our real being, is God. Think of that. Just think of that. You're standing in the realm of God. You're standing in the spiritual universe, and your real being, your invisible, infinite, incorporeal self, is God. God in expression, or the Son of God. Therefore, when we meditate, when we make contact, with our capital S self. Our divine self, our real self, our infinite self, And from the moment that we have contact with it, infinity begins to flow forth. Immortality, eternality. The Master says, I of mine own self can do nothing. If I speak of myself, I bear witness to a lie. I and my Father are one, and I can do all things that the Father doeth. I can be all things that the Father is. I am the life. I am the truth. I am the way. I am the bread and wine and water. Remember, he said that I can of mine own self do nothing, but through my God self, through my God being, I can do and be all things. So with this I, which of myself is nothing, the moment I go within to my native soil, which is my inner selfhood, my inner divine being, and become one with the vine, I can then bear fruit richly. Everything from the Godhead can now pour forth through me, and I am no longer limited. I am no longer limited to my age, or to my bank book, or to my education, because now I am drawing up from the depths of my inner being all that is necessary for my experience. However, with the revelation of my true being, my true identity, I realize that the self of me is God. Therefore, I can reach down into this withinness and find myself one with the vine, one with the Christ, one with my divine sonship, one with my divine selfhood. So, this is how we impersonalize. Stop seeing yourself as good or evil. Stop seeing yourself as limited. Stop seeing yourself as a person, as a personal self. Start seeing your withinness, one with the vine, one with Christ, one with divine sonship, one with divine selfhood. The moment that contact is established, it is exactly as if a voice said, I am with you. I am going before you. I will be your bread, your meat, your wine. I will appear outwardly as your opportunity. I will appear as your companionship, as your home, as your safety, as your security. I will do all things for you. And so we impersonalize self from being a limited personal sense of self to listening for the voice of self within. And when it says, I go before thee, fear not, I am with thee, then we have heard the impersonal self, the self that I really am, the self that you really are. The moment I have made that contact with that divine self, I no longer look to parents, or to children, or to neighbors, or to friends, or to brothers, or to sisters, or to government. I look within myself, make contact there, and then I'm patient until the flow begins to come from within to the without. And folks, that's a very real experience when you hit that switch within. The flow begins to flow from within to the without. And it has no limitations. It flows heaped up, pressed down, and running over. In other words, he says, when the master says, if I go not away, the comforter will not come unto you, he is indicating that we may draw on him until such time as we too have gained the realization that he before us has gained. I in the midst of thee. The I in the midst of thee is your wine, your water, your bread. The presence that appears in your experience as divine harmony. You remember last week we talked about harmony, spiritual harmony. And that's what happens. When there's a spiritual healing, you don't experience physical abundance, but you don't experience physical lack. You experience spiritual harmony, which appears as what your need is fulfilled. If you need $1,000, it will be there. If you need a ride to California, it will be there. If you need a place to stay, it will be there. If you need a companion, it will be there. I'm telling you from experience. So turn each day in one of your periods of meditation to the realization that God within me is the self of me. God is my true selfhood, my infinite selfhood, and it is my Father's good pleasure to give me the kingdom. My Father knoweth what things I have need of, even before I speak. Therefore, in this meditation, I need only acknowledge, Father, that thou art closer to me than breathing. In the very midst of me. And because thou art the infinite intelligence of this universe, thou knowest my need even before I do, even before I could possibly ask. And that is one of the wondrous things that happens on this path, is you see this arm, this hand of God, reaching right up, and providing your need before you even know you needed it. Providing fulfillment. And it's amazing. It's a miracle. And you know it. You know something spiritual has happened. It is thy good pleasure to give me the kingdom. Whatever that may be, it is thy good pleasure to forgive me my sins. It is thy good pleasure to go before me to make the crooked places straight. It is thy good pleasure to be my constant companion. It is thy good pleasure to be my bread, my meat, my wine. Thou art my life eternal. Thou art my resurrection. Thou, Father, in the midst of me, art my infinite supply, my eternal life, and only from the divine fountain in the midst of me will I look for my good to flow. Now that's a commitment there, isn't it? So we have the main principle. There is neither good nor evil. we have the principle of impersonalization. All that the Father has is mine. Impersonal good. Not a personal item anywhere. Impersonal, invisible, incorporeal, immortal, eternal, spirit. You see, in doing this, you are now dying daily to the belief that someone external to you owes you something, that someone external to you must provide for you, that you are dependent on a person, a group, an employment, an investment, a government, that you are in any wise dependent except upon this infinite self, which is your being. And that's how you impersonalize your good. There is no such thing as good or evil, but there is spiritual harmony, and that you receive within. It becomes easier for you when you think of yourself in terms of capital S instead of small s. Think of yourself as being the Son of God. Think of yourself always with the capital S, one with God, heir of God, joint heir to all the heavenly riches. Then you will find that you have impersonalized yourself, because gradually you will come to realize you are not finite being. You are not man whose breath is in his nostrils. You are not that creature who is not under the law of God, neither indeed can be. You now consciously have the Spirit of God dwelling in you, and according to Scripture, this makes you the Son of God, the child of God. If so be the Spirit of God dwelleth in you, then are you the child of God, or the Spirit, the consciousness. If it so be that the consciousness of the presence of God is in you, then you do become the child of God, no longer mortal, no longer material, no longer finite, no longer dependent on any circumstance or condition external to your own being. This is how you put on immortality and put off mortality. Right there, that's exactly how you do it. Put on immortality. Think of what this means when we come to seeing other people. Remember now, what we have declared of ourselves is also true of them. God is not a superhuman being that deals in personalities, liking one of us and not liking another. God is too pure to behold iniquity. God sees us as his own image and likeness. Therefore, anything that is true of Joel must be true of you. Therefore, God is your selfhood, and your selfhood is infinite, and it is from your selfhood that the flow of good begins to appear, the flow of harmony. Now this is established in you, and you meditate upon this. He's given us, what, three meditations in this one chapter? Three different things to meditate on? You practice this day in and day out in your meditations until, and it will not be too long, you will begin to see this fruitage appear. You are to consciously remember that because of your identification with God, your Father, the Father within you, your real self, you can now expect that rich fruitage to appear. Once this has been established in you, you have another function. You have to begin secretly, silently, and very sacredly to look around at the members of your household, the members of your family, your friends, and remember what you thought they were, and begin now to change your concepts of them so that you realize that all that you have been declaring for yourself, all that you are now knowing to be truth of yourself, is likewise true of them. They too are one with this divine selfhood. Now, let's go back for a minute and look at something. In the very first chapter of the very first book, The Infinite Way, Joel says, "Now we understand that there is not a spiritual universe and a material world, but rather what appears as our world, this world, is the Word made flesh, Spirit made visible, or consciousness expressed. All the error that has existed down through the ages is founded on the theory or beliefs of two worlds. One, the heavenly kingdom, or the Garden of Eden, or spiritual life, and the other, a material world, or mortal existence, each separate from the other. Because of this sense of two worlds, men have always attempted to bring harmony into the discords of human existence through an attempt by prayer to contact this other world, or spiritual realm, and to bring spirit, or God, to act upon the so-called material existence. Let us begin with the understanding that our world is not an erroneous world, but rather the universe in which we live is the kingdom of heaven, the realm of reality about which man entertains false concepts. So the work of bringing health and harmony into our experience is not getting rid of or changing a mortal material universe. The work is in correcting the finite concept of our existence. And here he is, all these many years later, in this book, Spiritual Power of Truth, telling us the concept that we need to change is the concept of good and evil. That we're standing in the kingdom. He has said that right from the first chapter of the first book. But we do not see it. We see this world made up of the belief in good and evil. And so our work is, as he said, changing our concept from good and evil to that which the inner voice reveals, my kingdom here and now. Now, it's not, as he said earlier in this chapter, it's not a matter of going out of here after hearing this talk and saying, oh, God is all, there is no good or evil. That won't do it. You have to sit down. You remember that? Sit down. In your meditation, there is no good, neither good nor evil. Now, Father, what is here? And then open your consciousness for that inner voice. That voice will reveal what's here. Be not afraid. It is I. And how that voice reveals itself to you, I don't know. But you will know when it does, and you will know where you're standing. So he says, therefore, regardless of other people's lack of demonstration, regardless of their lack of willingness to even learn about their true identity, you are secretly and silently knowing the truth. So know this at your employer's business, or among your employees, or with your customers or clients. You are knowing this in the classroom of both teacher and pupils. You are knowing this in the government. It makes no difference what these people may seem to be or be doing. You are now realizing their true identity. You are now realizing their oneness with their source, the universal source. When you are realizing someone's true identity, you are realizing their oneness with their source, and this is the reason not to give them a treatment. Save yourself from being a malpractitioner, because unless you are seeing them as they really are, you are malpracticing them, and your malpractice comes home to roost. Now this means that this has to be a total commitment. And so if you're impersonalizing yourself, you have to impersonalize yourself everywhere you see another self. Because if you open the door to the belief in good and evil, some other self is evil, some other self is very good, then you've taken yourself right out of the Garden of Eden. And it really is absolute. You take yourself out the minute you malpractice someone. Because when you're malpracticing someone, you're malpracticing yourself. Right? There's only one self. The self of you is the self of me. The self of you is the self of him. The self of her. The self of them. The self of that. The self of the trees. The self of the mountains. The self of the clouds. If you have a spiritual experience, you will see that you are one with all that is. That's yourself. Everywhere you look is yourself. And if you see someone else or something else, whether good or evil, you've taken yourself right out of Eden. You have partaken of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And you're kicked out. Get out. No one's doing it to you except you. So that's what it means, that's what he means when he says the malpractice comes home to roost. So there is a lot of work to do, isn't there? This chapter gives us a lot of work, and we can't do it by next Sunday. These chapters, well, he said, this particular principle, there is neither good nor evil, will take 1 year to demonstrate. So if you think you're going to get out of here by next week and graduate, you're wrong. It's going to take you a year to demonstrate this, and maybe longer. True, maybe shorter, but not much. Try it. And you'll see just how many times you forget to remember. What we must do is remember to forget. There is no neither good nor evil. So he's given us three meditations. He's given us two or three principles. He's given us instruction for the next year. And that's an awful lot, isn't it? That's a lot to digest. I suggest you go over this chapter more than once, more than twice, more than five times, and begin to live it. It's in the living of it that you change your concepts. It's in the living of it that you change your consciousness. It's in the living of it that you are transformed by the renewing of your mind from a mind that sees good and evil to a mind that beholds the kingdom of heaven, the presence of God, the one self. All right. Let us be still for a moment and see if there's anything else we need to add or clarify. Be still and know I This is really something, this surgery we're performing on ourselves. It is a spiritual surgery. We're cutting into our consciousness, and we're cutting out the belief in good and evil. And we are creating an opening through which the still small voice can reveal itself right here in the midst of you. Now, in the midst of you does not mean like when you're outside and you go within a house. In the midst of you means the way red and blue are in the midst of purple. And so I, in the midst of you, am God. This is not an easy path. It is simple, but not easy. There is a work ahead of us. But we can do it. We will do it. We'll do it together. All right. I'm going to wrap it up tonight. I know it was only 55 minutes or so, but I think everything that needed to be said has been said. Thank you so much for drawing this out, making this possible. If there was no one listening, I would have no reason to talk. So thank you for giving me reason to be. Blessings, my dear friends.